Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
All right, so we're continuing the letter Gimel. And the letter Gimel, we discussed at length, represents the concept of giving. It's kind of funny in English, giving and Gimel go together, but it's the idea of Gomel Dalem, like the Gemara says. Gimel represents the idea of giving. And David HaMelech is not doing the giving, but he's doing the asking. And he makes requests of Hashem in the letter Gimel. In the verses that correspond to the letter Aleph and Beis, as you may remember, David HaMelech primarily made pronouncements. He discussed what is the meaning of virtue, what every Jew should yearn for, what is the appropriate way for us to be able to succeed at Torah study, at ingesting Torah knowledge. But at this point, David HaMelech changed when it came to Gimel, and he started to ask. He began with the request of Gemol al Avdecha. He asked, he made a request. He asked that Hashem deal kindly and give. And he said, Gal Einai. We talked about this in great detail in the last class. Open my eyes so that I might see the wonders of your Torah. The Rambam in Perek Chelek, which is in the Masechet Sanhedrin, in the eighth principle says about this very verse, that one should know that each and every detail of the Torah does indeed contain tremendous wisdom and profundity. That's the truth. The truth also is that we don't see it. We don't see it. It's like the iceberg. We only see maybe the tip of the iceberg. And sometimes we start to plumb the depths. We see a little bit more, but we rarely, if ever, are able to appreciate the full magnitude. And one, I should amend that statement and say the truth is we can never appreciate the full magnitude of the Torah, for the majesty of the Torah is, as it is written, Rechava Mine Yom. It is broader than the greatest sea, as it says in the book of Iyov. So the truth is, we never really fully grasp and know the depth of the Torah, and that's exactly what David HaMelech wanted and what he sought. He should have his eyes opened to a greater depth. Right? You can't say open the full depths of the Torah, because that will never happen. He could say, open my eyes, I should see a deeper rung, a deeper element of the Torah. I'm just saying this is a follow-up of what we learned last week. And before we go on to the next pasuk, I just want to say that the word gal, if you scramble the letters, it's lag. Right? Gal is gimel lamed, and lag is lamed gimel. What would we do? Big deal, right? Okay, so what is lag? In Judaic tradition, lag ba'omer, it's the only time. The only time we use the word lag is lag ba'omer. So lag ba'omer, of course, is the yahrzeit, the passing of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the author of the book of Zohar, which is the primary foundational text of Kabbalah. And in some ways, our sages talk about the day of Lag BaOmer almost as being a Matan Torah of sorts, a giving of the Torah, an opening of the floodgates of the secrets of the Torah. That's how Lag BaOmer is seen. So because Lag BaOmer is seen that way, the Alter Rebbe says in a very interesting mimer, talking about Lag BaOmer, that a gal, which is Lag scrambled back, can mean to uncover, but a gal can also mean a pile, like a pile of stones. Like it says, Yaakov made a pile of stones to make a division between his father-in-law Lavan, who was an evil fellow, and he and his children who would go back to Eretz Yisrael and live a righteous life without his interference. So a gal is a pile of stones or an obstruction. It's a wall, something built to protect, something built to divide. And the Alter Rebbe said that with regard to mystical teachings of Torah, there was some kind of blockage. There was a wall that had been in place, and that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had managed to break open that wall and allow the secrets of Torah to start to penetrate our existence. And the process begins with Lag BaOmer. It moves to the next level on a global sense with the teachings of the Arizal and the advent of the Hasidic movement and the teachings of Hasidus Chabad. So this is all about the idea of Gal and the secrets of Torah. I say this merely as a chaser, a follow-up to our last week's class. So I missed this information, so I'm just putting it in there. And from here, we move forward into the next. I think we're going to get through two verses today. I think that's all we're going to get. But it's okay. That's good. So that's verse 19 we're up to. Chapter 119, verse 19. David HaMelech makes what seems to be a very strange statement. He says, Ger anochi ba'aretz. The word ger, everybody's very familiar with the word. A ger is a coward. I'm a stranger, he says. I'm a stranger in this land. Al taster mimeni mitzvesecha. Don't conceal your mitzvahs from me. So I'm a stranger in this land. You could also take the word of ger, and you could call it a traveler, or a sojourner if you want to use fancy English. So I'm a traveler in this world. And therefore, Hashem, al taster. Here's a request, al taster, don't conceal. But what precipitates the request is, ger anochi, I'm a stranger. Okay, so what if you're a stranger? First of all, what does that mean anyway? What does it mean David HaMelech is a stranger? What does it mean he's just traveling here? We're all just traveling here. That the nature of life is transient. There's the famous story that somebody once came to the Magid of Mizrich, who was the leader of the Hasidic movement, and he was shocked at the austerity of the home furnishings. And he was so surprised that this wealthy man actually burst out in surprise. He says, where's your couch, sofa? You don't even have a decent table to sit at. It was like a rough board that was on top of tree stumps. And the Magid, without skipping a beat, said, where's your furniture? So the man said, my furniture? It's at home. I have beautiful furniture. Very, very tasteful furnishings. So the Magid said, good. So my furniture is also at home. So he said, what do you mean? He said, I'm just traveling here. We're all just traveling here. This is not really home. This is not where we belong. This is not our sense of permanence. We're just traveling. So we're travelers here. So I have to take my furniture with me too. My furniture is Gan Eden. My furniture is the treasure trove of Neshamas. The Magid didn't mean to say that only really for himself. He lived it, but he was kind of telling this person, what are you getting caught up with? That's what life's about, the here and the now? Everybody knows that materialism is here today and gone tomorrow. Money, fame, it's like vapor. People have it, and all of a sudden, with a flash, everything is gone. So nobody thinks they're invincible. Nobody is foolish enough to think that whatever I have forever. In a moment, we could lose health, chas v'shalom. In a moment, we could lose wealth, chas v'shalom. In a moment, we could lose nachas, chas v'shalom. What does David HaMelech mean to say? Ger anochi, I'm a stranger. Or I'm a traveler. We're all travelers. Why should David HaMelech merit this blessing? Why should he have the right, if you will, or the veracity to make this request? Al taster, don't conceal. Of course. I mean, like, he's just making a matter-of-fact statement about life in general. So why anochi? Ger anachnu, ger manachnu, or life is transient. That's the question. Okay, so to understand this, we're going to first take a look in the Medrash. And the Medrash says, on this very pasuk in the Medrash Tillim, it says, the Medrash asks this question, actually. Not always does the Medrash ask the question. Sometimes the Medrash comments, and you have to figure out what provoked or what allowed for this commentary. But the Medrash begins with a question. It says, really? He's a convert? That's news to us. V'chi ger haya David? Was David a convert? Was he born Jewish, last we checked. So the Medrash says, no, he wasn't a convert. That's true. His great-grandmother's a convert. But kishem shamizgayer hayom eini odea klum batorah, just like somebody who converts to Judaism. He knows nothing. Now, a person who comes to Judaism after not being initiated, maybe growing up what we call secular, you had some kind of experience as a child. You played with a dreidel, I don't know, you ate Hanukkah gelt, or you actually got real Hanukkah gelt. Whatever it was, something, there's some kind of background, and sometimes, by the way, that background is not only helpful, it's the opposite. Because the preconditions that you have sometimes are simply profoundly wrong. Like that's not Judaism, but you have this idea. That's what you heard growing up in synagogue, but yeah, that's not what the Torah says. But it was dead in temple. Okay, fine, that's a problem. But then you have a convert, and the convert comes like with a clean slate. So it's like, I know my other faith system, I know my other culture, but I'm starting all new. So when the convert starts to learn about Judaism, it's all fresh. It's all brand new. It's all exciting. David HaMelech said, you should know that my eyes are wide open. I'm like a person, I don't come with preconceived notions. I'm like somebody who doesn't know Benyaminli the Smiley, doesn't know from his right to his left. And because he doesn't know from his right to his left, it's as if I know nothing in Torah. So when I learn something in the Torah, I'm not saying, okay, let me see what the Torah has to say, and then I plug it into my system, my knowledge, my awareness. How does this compute with what I know already? By the way, we all tend to do that subconsciously. We all have a certain value system in place. We all have certain axioms, certain things which we assume to be so. And because we assume them to be so, so whatever we're going to hear, since these are axioms, these are immutable truths, whatever it is I'm hearing now, if it's going to be true, it has to fit into my immutable frame of truth. Well, that's not true, actually. Your axioms are only your axioms. They're not real axioms. They're not real immutable truths. They're the truths that you mistakenly thought are the truths. So when one learns Torah, one really has to be open-minded. But the more you know, the harder it gets to be fully open-minded, to have the wonderment of a child. You ever see a child learn something new? They're like excited. Like adults are like, leave me alone. I just want to rest. I just want to like chill out. And the child is like, I'm so bored. Entertain me. Teach me something new. They can't sit still. Everybody's talking downstairs. The child comes running down. I don't want to go to sleep at night. Go back to your bedroom. No, he doesn't want to go to sleep. The adult is thinking, when are the guests leaving? I can't wait to get to bed. A child is such a fascinating creature. He's so excited about this. And in some ways, a convert starts off Yiddishkeit like that. Like a fresh sponge and so excited. There's a joke they say. He said, when will they stop calling me a Baal Tshuva? Said the man. He said, when you start talking during davening, and you stop listening to the Torah reading, when you disrespect the rabbi, then you won't be a Baal Tshuva anymore. Then you, I know everything. Once you can teach me, you start off fresh. So David HaMelech says, that's actually wrong. And now the Gemara says, Umayim David. What of, make this, think of it this way. David HaMelech, Sha'amar Kol Ashiris, V'chalam Zmeidam Alalu. He said, all these praises of Hashem. He had this songful expression about everything that under the sun when it comes to Judaism. And yet, David HaMelech says, Eini Yedeh Klum. I don't know anything. I know nothing, God. Teach me. I'm open-minded. I'm ready to hear. He says, aha, Allah has kama v'kama, anu, you and I, how much more so, if David HaMelech knew nothing, we definitely know nothing. So if David HaMelech is ready to be open-minded and said, let me accept the teaching on its merits, not based on what I think is true or correct or have understood previously, so this is the way we should study Torah. All right, so from this midrashic perspective, Geir Anochi, why is this a reason? I am a stranger and therefore you should teach me Torah. David says, you know why you should show me the mysteries of Torah? Because I'm not hung up on my old paradigms. I'm ready to listen. Okay, that's a compelling argument. Then the Medrash takes it further. And the Medrash says, you should know that this is also connected to the transient notion of life itself. And experiencing that sense of transienceness. That's probably not a word, but you know what I mean. It says in the book of Divrei HaYom, it says, Ki geidim anachnu lefanecha. We are like strangers before you, sojourners. Teshavim kechol aveseinu. We're as residential as our fathers, our ancestors were. Well, where are they now? Their bodies are in the cemetery. I mean, they're in a different world now. Guess what? We're here, and it's also transient. And the Medrash says, you know, the truth is that yomeinu al ha'aretz avar hatzel hazeh kein ha'adam. Just like the shadows pass. The fleeting shadows of an afternoon. They're so strong, those shadows, and the sun sets, and the shadows are gone. That's what our days are. We're just here for a brief little period of time. It goes by very quickly. So therefore, since Yomeinu Heim Ketzel, says the Medrash, since our days are like a passing, a fleeting shadow, Im Einam Leimdim Va'iskim Mateira, so if we're not going to sit and immerse ourselves and engage ourselves in the pursuit of Torah, when exactly do we expect to get wise? When do we expect to fulfill the destiny of our purpose if we don't take the time for it? If it's not even a focus. And indeed, the Medrash finishes off. This is what our sages said in Pirkei Avos. Hayom katzar, v'hamelacha meruba. The day is short. The work is great. The workload is overwhelming. Hapoyel u'matzelim. We are wired in a fashion that is lazy. That's our natural wiring. But the stakes are high. Hasachar harbe. And bal habayis deichik. The employer, our employer, he's pressuring us. He expects results. So if we don't perform, we are the big losers. Lakach nemar, says the Medrash. Therefore it says, Geir Anochi Ba'aretz, that I am a stranger, and therefore David HaMelech pleads, he begs, Al Taster, don't conceal your mitzvahs from me. Now this Medrash is going to be our launching point. Okay, so two things in the Medrash. Number one, David's freshness. His willingness to listen to new things, not to be, oh, I heard that already. That's boring. And more importantly, from the Medrash that takes it in a new direction, the direction of David HaMelech's look at life, his perspective that life is transient, and it passes us by a fleeting shadow, and therefore we should utilize the time that we have well and effectively and meaningfully. So this Medrash, I believe, is the foundation for the primary commentaries on Tilum. Let's start off with Rashi. Geir Anochi Ba'aretz, Rashi translates this not as a convert, but rather the second approach of the Medrash. He says, Yamim Mu'atim. I'm a sojourner, it's just a couple of days. It's all it is. It's a few days. Yesterday you were teenagers. Where did the time go? That's the way it is. And therefore, al tashter mimeni. He says, mitzvaysecha hane'elamais, the hidden mitzvahs, the things that are not obvious, the things that are not easily discernible. Sha'ucha l'kaimam, that I should be able to fulfill those mitzvahs. Rashi seems to emphasize not so much a study of Torah as much as being able to fulfill one's destiny. There's a lot of little things that's expected of us. We don't even realize sometimes. In Lay Akshav, Rashi finishes off with the famous words coined by the sage Hillel, if not now, Eimatai, when will I do it? Now is the time. So this is the Geir Anoichi. That's why David HaMelech has an urgency when he makes this request. And you know, a lot of times when you need something urgent, you feel as if you have the right to make a request. Here's a silly example. You come to the airport and your flight is boarding already. And you're behind all these people who are just waiting in line. They got there before you, by the way. They were more organized. And you, I say, can I please go in front of you? And they go like, why should you go in front of me? Because I'm late. Because I need to catch my flight. Well, that's your problem. Why'd you come late for? Well, let's not talk about whether I deserve it or not, but I still feel I have the right to ask you, what do you care? You're going to get to the gate and sit there and do nothing. I have urgency now. I have to get there. I don't have the liberty of time. I don't have the luxury of time. I need to get there. So David HaMelech is making this request. He says, why am I making this request? Why Hashem should do something special? Hashem should, I'll taste it, don't conceal it from me. David HaMelech says, because I don't have any time. I need it now. The time is passing by very quickly. And because he doesn't feel that luxury of, I'll do it tomorrow, next week, next year, next decade, therefore David HaMelech makes that urgent request. We find a similar thing in the Radak. When he interprets his verse 19 of Geir Anochi, he says, Ha'odom doime bezeha'olam. By the way, it's really fascinating because Radak and Rashi never had a conversation. It's like not like they ever met. But they all studied the same Midrashim, and each one in his own syntax encapsulated the words of our sages, which is the oral tradition of the Book of Tillim. He says, a person in this world is kiger she'ein lei ma'amad b'makom. So Rashi just talked about short days. He didn't go into whether with the meaning of ger. So whatever that means, I'm not talking about whether it means a sojourner, a traveler, a transient individual, a convert, somebody who just arrived. He just said, yom ma'atim. You figure out what Rashi was thinking, where he came from. He said, the days are short. The Radak develops this a little bit. He says, I am like a convert, meaning I am like a stranger, he said, that I don't have any permanence here. It's not so much convert as it's stranger. So a person who lives here, this is his place, feels comfortable. The person who's here for a visitor, for a little while, he feels that he has to utilize the moments because he doesn't really belong here. He's a stranger here. It's like when you go to a new city, you go to visit somewhere, you go to see the tourist attractions. If you're one of those organized people, you find out where the tourist attractions are before, and you schedule your days, you want to go here and you want to go there. With these people living in Toronto who never were in the CN Tower. They live here for like 30 years, they never went to see it. Like I went once, like in 18 years. Why? First of all, what I care. Second of all, I can go tomorrow. So why should I go today? There's no urgency. But when you visit Toronto, you're like, okay, I heard there's a CN Tower. Can I go visit it? Like, this, you want to do the things. There's an interesting study. I shared this a little while ago in one of my classes. That people who live in Ontario use their boats more often than people who live in Miami. Which is counterintuitive. Because in Miami, the day of possibility of using the boats is probably over 300 days a year. Maybe even higher. Maybe it's 320 days a year. Where it's a fine day to go sailing. In Toronto, if you get 90 days, you're lucky. I don't know. Want to be very, very optimistic? Maybe it's 120 days. Maybe. 130 days. That's it. You can't really take your boat out now. It's not snowing for whatever reason right now, but it's not boat weather. Everybody's boats are up on the docks now, right? So why is it that people living in Ontario would use their boats more often? Because there's an urgency here. As soon as the snow finally melts on Shavuos, everybody's so excited. The summer is almost over already. A week into the summer, you're having nightmares of changing your snow tires. You want to utilize every moment. Your summer is so valuable here. People love the summer. They live the summer. People go to their cottages and they take out extra days of work. They revel in the summer. Why? Because it's gone tomorrow. In Miami, what's the difference? It'll be nice next week. It's nice next month. It'll be nice in 6 months. What's the urgency? So when there's urgency, we have a different approach. And the Radak says that. He says, because we're a visitor. When you're a visitor in a place, like summer visits here, it lives in Miami, it visits here. Oh, when we visit in a place, So when you visit in a place, you know that it's not always going to be here. And ein lo maimed v'kiyumbay. You have no permanence. You need to rush forward. And therefore, David HaMelech says, please, I'm begging you, Hashem, leitaster mimeni mitzvesecha. Don't hide your mitzvahs. You know why? Ki le'eda yeim nisi. I don't know when my day is coming. I don't know when the departure day is. None of us never know when a day comes. Everything can be hunky-dory, and boom, in a moment, everything turns around. So since we don't know the day of departure, none of us really have the ability or the liberty to say, I'll do it tomorrow. Who says there'll be a tomorrow? Seize the moment. Do it now. Once again, so there we have this idea of the Radak further developing this concept in this notion that there is a strange sense, not only a transient sense, but also a strange sense, and the idea of being a stranger, not being at home, not being in your place of comfort, not being in your natural orbit, that adds to this urgency and makes me transient. And the Ibn Ezra takes it even further. He says, what happens before the days of the GPS? He doesn't say that, but I'm just saying. Before the days of the GPS, when you're in a place and you're trying to find your way. You live in your city, you know where you're going. You don't need the GPS to go downtown. You know how to go downtown. You've done it more times than you could count. You can do it with your eyes closed. But when you're in a new place, well, you ask. So here's the thing, women ask, men go in circles, right? This is just the way it is. Nobody can understand this, but that's how it is. And then I have to ask, big macho me. I don't have to ask. I know everything. No, you don't. You're getting lost. You've been going in circles for the last 3 hours. I know, but I'll figure this out. I got it. I'll figure it out. You know. Okay, so the Ibn Ezra was a man. So he doesn't say, if you're a stranger, you're going to ask. He says, I know what happens when you're a ger, you're to'eh and you're shogeh, bedrachim. You're going in circles. You're blundering. You're going all over the place, right? So David HaMelech says, I'm like a stranger here. I don't really know what I'm doing here. I don't have this figured out. And here's the problem. Here's the problem, everybody. We only get one kick at the can. It's not like we get to a practice run. It's okay, then you're going to go live again. And then you can now learn from all your mistakes and do right. David HaMelech says, I'm not sure what I'm doing here. I don't really know I don't have directions. I don't have a clear roadmap. So please, Hashem, give me the directions. Help me understand where I'm going so I can utilize the time. All in a sense of the transient nature of things. Okay. So, we're doing this stage. I had the first medrash talked about the idea of David HaMelech being a sense of wonderment, like a ger, like a convert. From there we moved on to the idea of a stranger, which is not unrelated. The convert is strange to coming to a new thing. But the idea of not being familiar, and which gives us a sense of urgency. And then we have very interesting, we have an Alshech. And the Alshech says something which is unique. He says, David HaMelech, intellectually speaking, was in a different place. His head was somewhere else. Have you heard the proverbial absent-minded professor? Ever see an absent-minded professor? There are people like really brilliant people. You know, like the Rebbe's Chazer, the person who was responsible, the primary scribe who would review the Rebbe's teachings, Abiel Khan, probably the most brilliant man in our time. So more than once he would be found like he came all the way to 770. He lived six blocks away, he would still be carrying the garbage. Because his wife sent it out with the garbage, but if he got to drop it off at the bottom, he'd still be carrying the garbage. So, because whatever, he didn't really think of what he was holding and not holding. That was not an uncommon thing. You're talking about the ultimate absent-minded professor. He didn't live here. He doesn't live here. His head is somewhere else. The person is lost in loftier thoughts. So the Alshech says that David HaMelech was totally immersed in different places. And because his head was in different place, he felt almost intellectually estranged from life. He didn't, at a certain point in his life, he was so far removed from the everyday realities that it was like reading about outer space. It was like discussing something he's not familiar with. It wasn't really any longer his personal experience. So from that perspective, from the Alshech's perspective, David HaMelech is asking Hashem, show me your secrets, teach me your mitzvahs, like I've earned this in a sense. I've elevated myself. I've transported myself to a higher place. That's where I am. That's where I live. That's where my head is. And we have the famous maxim of the Baal Shem Tov that b'makom shemachshavto shel adam shamu nimsa, where your mind is, that's where you are. So that's where you are. And if that's where you are, that's a different story. They tell a little episode that once there was a teacher and one of his students was not listening at all. And it was really grating on his nerves, and he's giving the lecture, and the student is clearly not listening. And finally, the student kind of clues in, and the teacher says, welcome home. He says, what? He says, I don't know, you're traveling all over the place. You definitely weren't here. So we can sometimes be bodily in a place, but our mind is wandering somewhere else. David HaMelech intellectually was in a different place. We know David HaMelech as a sweet singer. We know David HaMelech as a political leader. We know of David HaMelech as a great warrior and a hero. But the truth is, what most of us do not know, and the Gemara talks to us about this in detail, was David HaMelech's prowess in Torah. He's a great Torah scholar and a great posek. That's the real David HaMelech. And you see a hint of it over here. Gera Noichi. His head was somewhere else. So therefore, when David HaMelech says, because my head is somewhere else, that's why I deserve to know the secrets, the mysteries of your Torah. This leads us into the Hasidic approach. So Hasidus has a fascinating take on this whole discussion of Geir Anoichi. And it begins back in the Chumash, of course. Okay, so in the Chumash, we have a pasuk in the Torah, actually the Parsha a couple of weeks ago, Parsha, the beginning of Parsha's Vayishlach, Yaakov Avinu is returning to the land of Israel, or what's called Canaan at the time. He was with Lavan on the other side of the Euphrates, in Iraq or Kurdistan, and now he's coming back to Israel. What's the problem? His brother is the problem. He's got family issues. Esav is coming to get him. So Yaakov is testing the waters. You know it's time to come home, but Esav is not exactly going to make this easy. Yaakov doesn't know how hard he's going to make it, doesn't know what he'll have to deal with. So he sends him a message. He sends messengers, and they're actually malachim, because Yaakov is afraid to send people, because who knows what he'll do to the people. So he sends malachim that look like people, just in case Esav is totally uncontrollable and unreasonable. And they have a message. What's the message? Message is, Im Lavan garti, va'eichar adata. I've been with Lavan. I'm not afraid of you. I was just busy. I'm back. And I tarry till now. That's where I was. So what is the meaning of the word garti? Im Lavan garti. They say in Hebrew, say, Im Lavan hayiti, with Lavan I was. Im Lavan hityashavti, with Lavan I settled. Im Lavan hitakavti, I got stuck with Lavan. What's garti? Funny word. It's the first time in the Torah it shows up as the word garti. So Rashi says, don't hate me because you think I got the blessings and therefore now I rose to great prominence. Well, guess what? It's 21 years later and I was just like a stranger. I didn't become a political leader. I didn't become famous. I didn't become a person of influence. You thought that's what the blessings are for, right? That's what you wanted. You wanted to become powerful and influential. You wanted to become popular. I didn't become any of those things. So clearly, what you hate me for or what those blessings that you were upset about, that's not the blessings I got. So don't worry about it. You can still be the famous guy. You can dominate. It's nothing to do. These blessings are different. The spiritual blessings and not the blessings that you wanted. So why did you hate me for it? I took something that you didn't want anyway. That's the first approach. Einon kedai lisnaisi al birchas avicha. You shouldn't hate me for those blessings. What were the blessings? Hevegvir la'achecha. You'll be a ruler. You'll be a master over your brother. But in the sky, maybe. It never happened. Am I your master? Am I famous? No. I was a stranger. So that's the word ger, literally like a stranger. And then Rashi says, another interpretation is, garti is the gematria, is the numeric equivalent of the word tar-yag. Now, when we say the word something is the gematria of, oftentimes what it means is that the gematria, meaning the numeric equivalent of a certain word, will be another word that shares the same numeric equivalent. So for example, in the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph is 1, and Beis is 2, and Gimel is 3. So Aleph, Beis, and Gimel gives you 6. So the letter Vav is equal to Aleph, because Vav is 6. And Aleph, Beis, Gimel is 6. So if I have, for example, in a word, where in one word there's an Aleph, Beis, and a Gimel used, and in the other word there's a Vav that's used, I have a gematria, I have an equivalent. The letter Vav equals Aleph, Beis, Gimel. That's sometimes how most often how we use gematria. Over here, no, gematria means that the word garti, it's not the gematria of. This is its number. When you want to write 613 in Hebrew, when you want to write numbers in Hebrew, the way you write numbers in Hebrew is first you write the largest number, then you write the second largest number, then the third largest and the smallest. That's how you write numbers. That's how you write it usually. So therefore, if I want to say 613, how will I write 6? There is no Hebrew letter for 600. There is a Hebrew letter for 400. What's that? The last letter of the Torah. There's a Hebrew letter for 200. What's that? A resh. So how would I write 600? Tav resh. So for example, we are now in the year Tav Shin Ayin Vav, which is 5,772. But Tav Shin Ayin Vav does not stand for 5,776. Tav Shin Ayin Vav stands for 776. What's with the 5? Well, the 5 is which millennia we're in. So if you wanted to write it out fully in Hebrew, you would write Hey with a dash, which means Hey Alafim, or we're in the 5th millennia, and then 776. So how do you write 776? Well, the first you have to start with 700. How are you going to write 700? What's the largest denomination we have? What's the most we can spend? Tough. Tough is? 400. Do we have a 300 denomination in the Torah? In the Hebrew alphabet? Yes, because we have 400. So we have to have 300. What's the letter before Tav? Shin. Very good. So the year is Tav Shin. Tav Shin stands for 700. Ayin. Ayin stands for 7, which is 70. Because it's being written as in 100. Then we go down to the lower decimal, to the tens. And then we go down to the single digits. So we have Tav Shin stands for 700. Ayin stands for 70. Ayin is 70. And Vav is 6. So it's 776. So if somebody says, what's the gematria of Tav Shin Ayin Vav? You would say, what do you mean what's the gematria? That's like saying, what's the number of 100? 100? There's no gematria of Tav Shin Ayin Vav. That's the number. But if I took the word Tav Shin Ayin Vav and I wrote it, I used the Tav Shin Ayin Vav, but I wrote Vav Shin Tav Ayin. I would say, what's the gematria of Vav Shin Tav Ayin? I don't know, I have to stop for a minute, scramble the letters around, I'll say, oh, the gematria is 776. Or I could have a totally different word, like Ufaratzta, which happens to stand for Tav Shin Ayin Vav. But that's a different word, that's just different letters, and it you add up all the letters, it gives you the same total. The word Taryag, the numeric equivalent is 613, but actually the word Taryag, that is, Garti is Taryag. It's actually the same Hebrew letters. So we say that Garti is Gematria Taryag. Garti is the equivalent of Taryag. It happens to be the same Hebrew letters too. I don't have to translate any letters. It's not like there's a letter here which makes one or more. Taryag and Garti, that's the Gematria is 613. That's how it's said in Hebrew. When you want to say Taryag is not a word, Taryag is a number. The number is 613. So what's the Gematria of Garti? The answer is 613. Happens to be the same letters too. Okay, there's no sin that could work out that way. And what is the message then? The message is, Im Lavan Arasha Garti, I lived with Lavan, the wicked person, the evil person, toxic from a spiritual perspective, and nonetheless, Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti, I was careful about the 613 mitzvahs. And even when it seems Yaakov didn't do certain mitzvahs, he wasn't just flippantly ignoring those mitzvahs. That was part of his Torah calculation. He was keeping the mitzvahs. He was keeping the mitzvah principles. So why does Lavan care about this? Why would Lavan care if Yaakov remained observant or not? Lavan is not observant at all. Esav violates all the mitzvahs. What is he supposed to be impressed? Yaakov says, I'm a good boy. Be nice to me. I kept all the mitzvahs. Esav says, I care about the mitzvahs. I don't keep any mitzvahs. I could care less if you keep mitzvahs. Who are you trying to impress? Send messages like that to our father. He's interested to know if you keep mitzvahs. I don't care if you keep mitzvahs. So what's the message here? So the Be'er Ma'ayan Chaim explains, don't think, he said, that I am in a situation where you can dominate me, because in his blessings, Yitzchak said, when your brother will throw off the yoke of mitzvahs, then he will open himself up to subjugation. And that's the story of our galut. When we behave inappropriately, we allow chas v'shalom, our enemies, to dominate us. That gives them the strength. So Yaakov's message to Esav is, first of all, don't hate me. Secondly, if you think that you have the right to dominate me or to control me because you think that I was living with Lavan, I must have become rotten and toxic, guess what? Nothing doing. I have remained pure and holy. I did everything exactly as I should. Nothing has changed. You get it? So far, so good. So what's the connection between one interpretation and the other? They seem to have nothing to do with one another. Two reasons why Esav shouldn't think of hurting Yaakov. Reason number one, I didn't get the blessings you wanted anyway. There's no reason to hate me. Reason number two, in case you say, yeah, Yaakov, I know all about that. I'm not stupid. I know you got the blessings. I know which blessings you got. Those are the blessings I wanted. So Yaakov says, well, in that case, don't think that you can dominate me because I have been doing what I'm supposed to do and therefore I have earned the right to those blessings. I am not susceptible to your attack and to your domination. So the Rebbe once explained that these two interpretations are not mutually exclusive. One leads into the other. How is it that Yaakov managed to maintain the straight and narrow living in a toxic environment? We're all products of our environment. As the Rashba once said, Ha'adam humadini, a person is provincial. If you live in a province where people are a certain way, you invariably will become like that. We become influenced. We become products of our environment. How did Yaakov manage not to be a product of his environment? The answer is he was a stranger there. He never saw himself as part of the fabric of society. He always saw himself as apart from society. And because he never meshed, and because he never assimilated, and because he never became like everybody else, because he always knew he was a stranger, that's why he was able to keep the mitzvahs. One leads to the next. One of my big fights is always about parents celebrating or marking Halloween with their kids. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they go, oh, Rabbi, stop it. It's like, it's just some silly candies and let the kids have a good time and let them enjoy life. And why should I make them different? So why should you make them different? Because they are different. And the less you try to minimize the difference, the more tzaras you're going to have later. The kids said, yeah, indeed. Why indeed am I different? Why can't I go wherever I want, eat whatever I want, do whatever I want? I'm just like everybody else. That's the greatest message you give a child is we are different. We have a different kind of lifestyle. Our lifestyle is much older than the civilization we live in, much older than the country we live in, much older than the mores, which are considered normal. Our lifestyle goes back 3,329 years ago, back to our Sinai, and even earlier to the times of the patriarchs and matriarchs. Yes, we are different. So we want to be comfortable. We don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to be persecuted. But at the same time, we don't want to become just like everybody else. We do want to be separate and apart. We don't want to become part of society as in dominated, framed by society. It's almost a catch-22. On one hand, we want to be a part of society. We want to make a contribution. On the other hand, we want to be apart. How does one do that? So the truth is it depends how you look at yourself. If you see yourself as one who's making a contribution, so I'm there because I make a contribution. I'm not there because that's where I am. I don't belong here. Why am I here then? Because I have a job to do. What did the Navi say to us? Why are you amongst the nations? Because you have a job to the nations. Because you're supposed to be an Or LaGoyim. You're supposed to be a light unto them. But if I am really refracting everybody else's light, and I've adopted liberalism as my new Judaism, which is not true, it's not Judaism, and I say, oh, this liberal idea, yes, it has a Torah value. It's my Torah value that makes me liberal. Baloney. You're liberal because you're liberal. And your Torah value, that comes later. You're just giving excuses. You're dressing up, you're flavoring your liberalism with a little Judaism on top. That's not real Judaism. That's not you being a light unto the nations. That's you simply reflecting everybody else's light. That's not why I put you there, says Hashem. You're not supposed to be like everybody else. You're supposed to be different. You're not supposed to be looking at the polls and what's popular. You're supposed to be following what is true and what is good and what is virtuous. How do I know what is good, virtuous, and true? I look in the Torah, which is good, virtuous, and true, and godly. So when I look at the Torah that's godly, and I bring that light, I'm busy giving. If I'm busy giving, I don't have time to absorb. This is an interesting halacha in Hilchas Melicha. Melicha is when you have to salt the meat to remove the blood, because Jews don't consume blood. Some of that is biblical, some of it is rabbinic, but we don't consume any blood. So the meat has to be drained off, the blood is drained off, and only after is the meat considered kosher, even after it was ritually slaughtered. So not only ritual slaughter, it has to be ritually prepared. So what happens? You put salt. And the nature of salt is, it draws forth, right? Look at the sidewalks in Ontario. They're all killed for the salt, you know? You don't find this in California, Miami. So the sidewalks have a much longer life because they don't have salt on them. The salt destroys, it erodes, it eats up the cement. So what does it do to the meat when you put the salt on? It pulls, it sucks the blood out. Now, the thing is that at some point, if you leave the salt there, the salt loses its potency eventually. It becomes neutralized. And if you leave it there for too long, what happens to the blood? It just sinks back in. And then you never get it out. So the halacha is, the meat has to be moist. You use heavy salt, not the thin little salt. That's why coarse salt is also known in English as kosher salt. Because that's the kind of salt you have to use to kosher. Isn't that cool? So kosher, even the Gentile world calls it kosher salt. That's because, so that salt, those large flakes of salt, which are large enough not to sink into the meat, like table salt, that salt, the heavy salt, is then, it draws forth the blood, and we have to remove it immediately. We have an 18-minute window right away. As soon as it gets very dirty, gets very bloody, we have to bang it off, rinse it and bang it off, and then we can go on to the next level of preparing the meat to make sure it's kosher. And your butcher, of course, does all these things, which is why you need a good kosher butcher. Otherwise, you're in big trouble. This business of melicha, so the question is asked in Shulchan Aruch, one second. In the same way that the blood is going out, the blood can be going back in? So the Gemara's answer is, in the quote in the Shulchan Aruch, it says no. I did it tarted lemiflat leibala. Because it's so busy giving meat, the blood out, the meat is not reabsorbing. You can't suck and blow at the same time. When the meat is busy expelling, it's not absorbing. Our job is to expel, to exude holiness, to exude a message. If we're so busy exuding a message, we don't have any time to absorb any messages. And that's how David HaMelech remains like a stranger. Pardon me, Yaakov Avinu remained a stranger. Yaakov said, I didn't absorb from Lavan because I was busy giving, not taking. I didn't come to Lavan's environment to learn how to be. I came there to try to make a difference, to try to build a family, to try to develop Yiddishkeit and maintain my spiritual purity, not to ask Lavan to teach me about the finer things of life. You got that? Does it make sense? Okay, so that's the business of Lavan Garti. And the Rebbe says, therefore the two are seamlessly connected. The two interpretations of Rashi are not two interpretations. One is about the word ger, one is about the meaning of the word. One means stranger. One is about taryag. No. They're one and the same. Actually, one leads to the other. Because he was a stranger, that's how he was able to be the concept of taryag. Okay, now, going back to this chapter of Tillim, what is David HaMelech then really saying? David HaMelech is saying, and now we understand the Hasidic, we're starting to understand the Hasidic taken approach. Let's go back to the idea that was articulated first in the Medrash and then filtered through to us from the Radak and Rashi and Ibn Ezer. The idea of David HaMelech being uncomfortable, being strange. And I refer you back to the story with the Maggid of not being home, just be traveling. The message to us is that the material, physical things are dated and timely. Here today, gone tomorrow. And because they're here today, gone tomorrow, the only thing that is eternal is the neshama, the soul, the spirit, the peace of God that forms our nuclear essence. As we say, neshama shenasatavi, the neshama you placed in me, tehedahi, it's pure. It comes from a different place. We're strangers in a land. That's who we really are. And that strange neshama, which doesn't fit into the rubric of society, and which is the reason, really, that deep down, society never accepts us, because they know there's something different about the Jew. He's a stranger. So if you say, I am strange and different, I have a Shabbos, and I have kashrus, and I have all these halachas and rules, and that's what I follow, so the Gentiles feels uncomfortable with you, maybe, respect you for it. But if the Jew comes along and says, no, I promise you, I'm just like you. I can eat the pork with you. I can carol to be like the best of them. I can do everything you do, I can do too. And he's thinking, something's funny over here. I don't know. I know this guy is different. He keeps telling me he's the same. Something's up over here. And in a strange way, that's what leads. That doesn't prevent anti-Semitism, but invariably it has led historically to anti-Semitism. The fact is, nobody can deny this, that the Jewish community in Europe that was best assimilated and best suited and best fit into its local environment were the Jews who were living in the country of Germany. I say no more. That's point made. So therefore, when a Yid starts to think about this, he said, not only the material, the physical doesn't get in the way of a spiritual pursuit, but actually on the contrary, he has to be like Yaakov, that Yaakov is a stranger, but at the same time, doesn't mean he lives as an aesthetic. Doesn't mean he divorces the world. He is a part and a part at the same time. He is a part of everything. He takes part in everything. But when he takes part in things, he does so as a stranger, as somebody who's being apart. He's not really, not because he's part of everything else. He is taking a part in it because there's a godly purpose. Because he's sent here with a mission. And he's here transiently. The neshama is eternal. The material world is Hashem's beautiful world that was made for us to re-engineer, to elevate, to fix. That's tikkun olam. So when you live like that, then it's a whole different story. That's David HaMelech says, you know why I deserve the secrets of your mitzvahs? Do you know why I need the secrets of your mitzvahs? Because I'm trying to change the world you created. I'm trying to make it a better world. In order for me to make it a better world, in order for me to do what I have to do, I need more secrets. I need more information. I need more knowledge. The more knowledge I have, the more profundity I appreciate, the more effective I'll be. The more I can continue to be a stranger who is making a difference. And that's the story of the Jewish people. David HaMelech expressed it for us. Geir anochi ba'aretz. When it comes to artziut, when it comes to materiality, I'm a geir, I'm a stranger, I'm a sojourner. It's all temporary to me. And therefore, I'll pass there. That's a reason why you shouldn't conceal your mitzvahs from me. In Eir HaTorah, in Parshas Vayishlach, the Tzemach Tzedek develops this idea in a fascinating way. He says, you should know that all tzaddikim are called geirim. All the tzaddikim are called converts. I said, really? Why are the tzaddikim called converts? He says, I'll tell you why. Because what is the nature of a tzaddik? The tzaddik always looks at this world as a strange place. He doesn't get this world. You talk godliness to him, the tzaddik gets it. You talk this funny business, he doesn't speak it. It's not his language. It's like a person who goes traveling to a different country. They speak a different language. They have different body language. They have different societal norms. Everything's different. You're out of sorts. Here's an interesting piece of trivia, which I remember, and I have no reason why I remember this. So I once read this somewhere, that during the World War II, there were American soldiers that were stationed in Great Britain. And many of those American soldiers stationed in Great Britain ended up dating English girls. And there are lots of people, I know people, in fact, who are war brides, they call them, English girls, who came back to Canada afterwards. American and Canadian soldiers stationed in Great Britain. Actually, it was an even greater phenomenon with Canadian soldiers, because they went into battle only at the end. And you know, all the English boys were busy fighting, so the Canadian boys were available. Okay, so there was this psychologist who did a study on issues that they were having between North Americans and the bigger problems with the Americans, because the American society is more different than England. Canadian society is more similar. At least Ontario is more English. But the more different it was, the difference was that the societal norms are actually not the same. Even though we all speak English and we think ourselves all as Western, but societal norms are not the same. So let's say, again, it's an example. For the English girl, when the GI, the American soldier or Canadian soldier kissed her, she was ready to say yes to a marriage proposal. Because in England, they were very straight-laced. Like a kiss was like a big deal. But in the meantime, in the United States, a kiss was like nothing. Like you meet a girl, like 3 days later, you're kissing her. So she would be responding and he's like, oh, whoa, hey, I didn't say anything. Like I just kissed you. And he's like, yeah, but doesn't that mean? They didn't understand each other. So it looks very similar, but actually when you broke it down into the elements, because you were a stranger, you didn't know how to function there. The tzaddik is almost like a nerd. He doesn't understand the material world. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what makes people tick. He doesn't know how to go and curry favor with people. Why? Because the only way the tzaddik is effective is he speaks to neshama. The tzaddik has a whole different level of functionality. When the tzaddik speaks to neshama, he hears that people respond, they don't even know why. Because he touched something deep within them. But the regular, normal, everyday comings and goings of like the what we're going to call the typical trappings, or the regular framework that we work within, the tzaddik doesn't understand that framework. He doesn't really live in it. He looks like he's living in it. Sounds like he's living in it, but he really isn't. His head is somewhere else. And the Tzemach Tzedek says that Ein Mechashven Ha'ilam Azel Klum. The regular person, money is money talks. The Tzaddik, money means nothing. It's irrelevant. It's all temporary. There's a famous conversation that's recorded between the Friedrich Rebbe and his jailers, the KGB, notorious KGB agents that arrested him. And they sit him down, he's being arrested. Remember, he hadn't eaten all day, he was seeing people to 3 o'clock, till very late at night. And he's first going to now have dinner after seeing people, which is a gut-wrenching experience, and the KGB bursts into the house. And they physically and mentally and emotionally torment everybody. And then the Friedrich Rebbe is manhandled and hauled off to prison. And they start asking him questions. It's asking a question. First question, say, what do you do for a living? He says, I serve God. How old are you? He makes the calculation from the birth of the Alter Rebbe, and he says 180 something years old. And he said, do you know where you are? He says, yeah. I'm in a place that doesn't need a mezuzah, because a toilet and a stable doesn't need a mezuzah and a jail. So they were totally unnerved. He unnerved them. They're trying to unnerve him. He unnerved. They never saw a person like this. So the guy pulled out a revolver, and he cocked the gun, and he pointed at the Friedkeeper's temple, and he said, do you know what this toy is? This has made many an unwilling individual start to speak. So the Friedkeeper very calmly said, that toy does not frighten me. It only frightens people who have many gods in one world. But I have two worlds and one God, so your toy doesn't frighten me. It doesn't change me. To maintain that kind of composure, you have to be a person who's living in a different place. A normal person can't. No matter how much composure you have, how cool you are, when your life flies flashes before your eyes, you lose it. Friedkeeper didn't lose it. Why? This is why, because he's a tzaddik. Because the whole world to him was a temporary thing. And interestingly, the Tzemach Tzedek connects the word ger, which means stranger, to the word gargir. Gargir is a biblical word that's used to describe a cluster of grapes which is separated. Like a little... See, the tzaddik is living in a different world. And the tzaddik, they know that they have been separated from their holy source. We don't realize it. We forgot we have a source, Bachal. The tzaddik knows about the source all the time. He feels he doesn't belong here. He's been distanced from his source. And just like a stranger longs to go back home, because no matter how nice it is, when you're a stranger, even when you're on vacation, you want to go home at some point. Everybody wants to go back to home, sweet home. The tzaddik longs to go home, sweet home. We don't want to leave this world. We want to stay right here. The only reason the tzaddik wants to stay in this world is because he has something to accomplish. But really, he longs for a different place. He longs for his source. And therefore, says the Tzemach Tzedek, the Avos were all called Gerim. By Avraham it says, Ger v'toshav anochi yamach. He called himself a Ger. He called himself, I'm a stranger here. By Yitzchak it says, Gur ba'aretz hazois. Hashem said, sojourn in the land. He didn't say, settled in the land. By Yaakov it says, Be'eretz migurei aviv. Even when Vayeshev Yaakov, even when Yaakov settled, it was Be'eretz migurei. Migurei means the land, his father sojourn. It's all a journey. And Mitzamach Tzedek says, V'chein David HaMelech olav shalom. That's the meaning of what David HaMelech says in Tilim, that he says, Ger anechi ba'aretz, himshel l'satzmei leger. He prepares himself to a ger, and the Tzemach Tzedek sounds very similar here to what the Radak says, mezume l'nesia. His bags are packed, ready to go. So ready to go? No problem. I'm all packed, ready to go. The Tzaddik is living in a person, David HaMelech was living in a situation, ein yedeh ha'eis, he didn't know when the time is going to be. And because he didn't know when that time is going to be, tzarech shikach tzedul l'derech, when you're going on a journey, but you're not sure when exactly a ride is coming to get you, what do? You prepare. You get your luggage packed. What else do you do? It's going to be a long journey. What are you going to take along? Food. We're Jewish, you know, like provisions. So you never know when it's coming. So what was David HaMelech's provisions? What do you think? You take a sandwich to the other world? They tell a joke. The one there was bombing going on in Tel Aviv. They wake up in the middle of the night and the husband's fumbling. He's looking for his false teeth. And the wife screams, what do you think? They're throwing sandwiches at us. What do you... he comes to the other world with what? With wealth? With material plenty? What do you come to? What do we come with? He needs Seidel Aderech. David says, I need it now. What do you need? Any mitzvahs? Why? Because he's ready to go. Because that's why he says, I'll toss them in many mitzvahs. Don't withhold your mitzvahs from me. I need it. I need the mitzvahs now. I gotta go. And someone said, develops this idea, and he says, this is also connected to the concept of the yearning that a tzaddik feels. Which just links us into the first verses. If you remember, we talked in the first two verses of Gimel about the yearning. So this connects to the yearning also. There's that yearning David HaMelech experiences. And that yearning is the idea of mitzvahs, the idea of Torah, and that somehow it connects it to another pasuk that says that Hashem is va'ayiv ger lassus lechem v'simla, that Hashem loves the ger, loves the convert, to give him bread and clothing. It says the Tzemach Tzedek, mystically, it's a metaphor. Lechem is Torah, bread is Torah because we ingest it like something idea in our mind, and the concept of simla is mitzvahs, which are a garment. Mitzvahs are called levusha nefesh, garments of the soul. So now we understand what David HaMelech is saying when he says ger anochi. Now we know what he means is I'm a stranger. Now we know we understand what that means when he says, oh, because I'm a stranger, therefore I want to learn, therefore I want to know, I must discover the whole profundity, the depth of your mitzvahs. And very interestingly, the Rebbe finishes off that particular, when he spoke about this, that sicha, he said that sometimes a person cannot experience this realistically. We know who you are. We're not ready to be strangers in this world. But he said, at least when we're connected to a tzaddik, when we can observe people who lived like this, it becomes an inspiration. That's why tzaddikim, echsidim tell stories of tzaddikim and stories of the Rebbe's. And if possible, we always wanted to be near the Rebbe, because when you observe the Rebbe and you see this, you see how a person can actually live like this, it inspires you to live like that also. And therefore, David HaMelech is holding on the highest madrega, on the highest level. But David HaMelech ultimately inspires all of us to yearn in the same fashion. Now you know what verse 19 is saying. David HaMelech follows it up and he says, in verse 20, Gorsa nafshi l'sava. David HaMelech says, my soul is crushed with a longing. Now, verse 20 makes perfect sense. My soul is crushed with this longing. I have this longing, O Mishpatecha, for your ordinances, b'chol eis, at every moment. Now we know what David HaMelech is yearning for it. Why do you mean his soul is crushed? Because he's so busy being bothered, all this narishkeit. He said, leave me alone. Let me do what's really important. I don't want to do it. This thing is taking up too much space on my hard drive. Too much white noise. Let me get back to what really counts. And therefore, David HaMelech is never comfortable. In every situation, yeah, you have to be a king and be royal and be presidential and deal with politics. When am I getting back to my sefer? When am I going to back to my learning? When am I getting back to my spiritual pursuit? That's what David HaMelech really sought. That's what he yearned for. As the Mefarshim tell us, what does it mean to me, Garsa? So Garsa, Rashi says, Mishtaberet nafshi. My soul is crushed up because of the taiva, because of the thirst, because of the yearning, because of the craving that I have to be close to Hashem. The Radak says, Garsha nishbara nafshi. My soul is broken up. Mirayv taiva al mishpatecha. Because I want to learn so badly. I want to know so badly. As the Mitzudas puts it, he says, Garsha is inyan hashvira. To be broken up. And he says, because I'm broken up. Because we said that he's a ger. And he's only here for a little amount of time. And he wants to go back to where he belongs. And he realizes that life is evanescent and passing and transient. And that each and every moment is precious. Therefore, don't hold back your mitzvahs. And nishbara mirev taiva. So I have such a strong, powerful yearning. Such a strong desire. So am I all broken up because of it? And that's where David HaMelech is experiencing this kind of yearning. Now, here's an interesting detail within this business of David HaMelech's yearning and being broken up. The Gemara tells us that Rava said a person should first learn a lot of material. Just get a broad understanding of the Torah concepts, and then afterwards you can have a better, finer understanding. So how do you know that? I learned it from David HaMelech. Because garsa means to crush like big pieces. To be toichen is to grind finely. David HaMelech wanted to know the whole Torah. He's very thirsty, wants to know everything. But when you want to know everything, you don't have time to grind it down to little pieces. You know the expression in Yiddish, chapnisht heselokshin? Maybe your Baba told you? You know, person like, he's starving. He's like so excited. See, he's like almost like, you know, a guy with ADD. He's like, can't see, looking all over. Like, somebody once described ADD to me. He says, you go into to one of the stores and you see there's like 30 television screens all playing different things. And the guy doesn't know what to look at. He's like, so much exciting stuff. A kid in a candy store. David HaMelech is so excited that he's just trying to gain more knowledge. He wants to know the whole Torah. The Torah is very vast. There's a lot to learn. So he's like taking big chunks. He's swallowing chunks. Now, ultimately, from swallowing chunks, David HaMelech learns to start grinding finally also. And it's very interesting that the word girsa is Aramaic for learning in great quantities. And in Hebrew, it comes from the word garas, which means with a sin, which means like garas carmel, like breaking up the fresh wheat. So the Gemara links it together, the big chunks to learning. And in yeshiva, actually, we do both. In yeshiva, there are times we have, that's called the seder, the order of le'iyuna, where we learn in depth. And then there has to be a seder of girsa, a seder when you cover ground. Why? Because the truth is you can't learn in depth unless you cover ground. Otherwise, you'd be just doing a little depth, you'll learn so little, you will never have the bigger picture. In order to really analyze, in order to really grind it up finally, you have to have the bigger picture. So that's the subtle secondary message of Garsa Nafshi. David HaMelech says, excuse me, my soul is broken up. My soul being broken up mean, in his yearning for Torah, he couldn't get enough of it. He's swallowing it wholesale, big chunks, because he wanted to know everything. I saw, interestingly, the Malbim says some. He says like that when you talk about this idea of garsa, he says that it's like when you remove the husk from the shell, so you remove like all the extraneous material, which you don't want to consume, and then when you take all the husk away, you peel all that away, take all the external, then you're able to get to the real secret, the real essence of the Torah. So the Malbim says, I mean, the Malbim does not speak in spiritual terminology at all. It's all philosophy. There's no spirituality there. I don't find any spirituality. It's very, very philosophical, but all very rational. But this got me thinking, and this is just my idea, so it may not be Torah. You don't have to listen. But it seems to make sense to me. When we learned Chassidus, we learned about the idea of Klipa. What is Klipa? Klipa is like, it's the extraneous part of creation. It's like a peel. You go to the store, you buy a banana, you only buy the bananas that have whole peels, and then you tear the peel off and throw the peel away. So what are you doing? You just paid for that. Yeah, I didn't pay for the peel. I paid for the banana. But you don't want to buy the banana that had a punctured peel. You only bought the bananas with the whole peels, and then you threw the peel out. The answer is yes. I bought the banana, but in order to get a banana, I need to have a peel too. We have this fancy packaging. We tear the packaging. We throw the packaging away. Why? The packaging did its job. Either it was maintaining freshness, or it was attracting you to buy the product. And really, the product is not so exciting. So it made a very exciting wrapper. You bought the wrapper, then you threw away the wrapper. I'm told that there's a baby boomer grandchildren, the toy manufacturers, are now aiming their goods toward the baby boomers, because a lot of grandparents and not so many grandchildren. But you have a lot of toys to sell. So how do you sell toys? You make it very attractive. The toys should be very attractive for older people. And then what happens is the grandparents come over and the kids play with the wrapping and the grandparents are playing with the toys. I've actually seen this. It's very comical. The kid's not interested. It's so sophisticated. The kid's not interested. But the package is really nice, right? That's not what it's meant to be. We are like, by the way, we are like that child many times. We get so caught up with the packaging of Ilum Haza, we forget the point. We get stuck playing with peels. But see, so that's, I mean, I don't think the Malbim meant that, because I never saw any of the spiritual language in his writings, but that got me thinking, Malbim, I like what you're saying. This is beautiful. So you're connecting this to peeling the husk away. He meant taking away distractions. But now on a deeper level, it's very mystical actually. It's very spiritual. Take away the klipa. David HaMelech peeled away the klipa. Garsa nafshi. I peeled away. I purged myself of klipa. I got rid of all the extraneous stuff. And I know what life's really all about. I'm looking for kedusha, for the holiness itself, only for the sparks. And that's why David HaMelech seeks mishpatecha b'chol eit, every moment. On a literal level, this can be very easily understood. David HaMelech understood what life's about. So it wasn't said, okay, I'll be a little Jewish now, I'll be a little spiritual now, let me go back to what I'm doing. No, that's who I am, b'chaleis. And any moment David HaMelech had, he reverted back to his default. What was his default? Closest Hashem, spiritual pursuit. That's b'chaleis. There's an interesting teaching that I saw, that b'chaleis says like this. The Gemara says that the difference between mitzvahs and Torah, that mitzvahs provide protection when a person is engaged in the mitzvah, whereas Torah knowledge always provides protection. Why? Because the mitzvah is yours when you're doing it. But the knowledge of Torah becomes a part of you. So even when you're not actively thinking about it, you carry it with you. So Maimer from the Alter Rebbe called Vadarta Pnei Zakon, where he talks about the idea of memorizing Torah. The reason we respect the Talmud Chacham is because all the Torah that he has memorized, even when he's not learning Torah, the halacha says somebody's doing a mitzvah, you have to stand up for him. For a Talmud Chacham, you always stand up. Why? Because the mitzvah is when you're doing the mitzvah. But the Torah is always there. So David HaMelech says, b'chol eis, because once I get, I really yearning, not just for the mitzvahs, before he talked about mitzvahs. He said, I'll tas to many mitzvah. But then garsa nafshi, what really my soul really crushed for, what's my real yearning, my real tava, is al mishpatecha. Because your Torah, that's b'chol eis. That's not just when I'm doing the mitzvah, but that's always with me. And so, this indeed, David HaMelech had every free moment that he had a little bit of time, as the Medrash says, behold, whenever Hoyle Pnai, immediately he went back to his learning of Torah. That was the most important thing to him, not the thing he did, because whatever. That's what you're supposed to do at this point, and I can go back to being me. That's who he really was. And that's what you're supposed to try to be. It says, V'agisaba yemen v'layla. You're supposed to be involved in Torah all the time. We're the people of the book. What does it mean, people in a book? It means we're always seeking knowledge of Hashem. We always want to learn Torah. Our conversation should be Torah, not because we have to program ourselves. Our conversation should be Torah. That should be what we're into. When we get together with friends, what do we talk about? The stuff we're into. If you're into Narishkeit, there's Narishkeit. If you're into Torah knowledge, and that's what you're seeking, then naturally that becomes the conversation. And that elevates our whole existence as we try to be a little bit more like David HaMelech.